All right, we're beginning here on the top of Kuf Lamed Vav and Aleph by the Mishnah. HaKotev Nechasav Levanav. Person who wants to gift all of his property to his children. You can see here in the Rashbam, he says Bari. We're not talking about someone who's on his deathbed. We're talking about someone in his lifetime wants to gift all of his property to his children. Why would he want to do that aside from trying to avoid taxes? Why would a person want to gift all of his property to his children? So the Rashbam claims that it was equivalent of a prenuptial agreement. The individual was going into or entering into his second marriage, and the ketubah of his second wife would have a lien on the properties or the assets that he owned. So he wanted to make sure that his children from the first marriage got their properties, so he wanted to take them out of his possession prior to the second marriage. So the equivalent of what would be a prenuptial agreement to get those assets away from the second wife for the children that are born of the second marriage. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Gershom explains over here that was a bari that wants to write kol nechasav libno ben abanim ol banav v'riba le'echad u'miyet le'echad t'blishon matana rashai. It's a case where he wants to favor a child over another child. He doesn't want to distribute the assets equally. If he does a derech yerusha, it's going to end up getting divided equally, leaving out Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. But then he wants to do this. So how does he do that? What's the mechanism for doing that? It's gifting. If you gift during the lifetime, then you don't have the issue of who gets what at the end or how it gets divided in the end, because you divided yourself by gifting it during your lifetime. So those are the reasons by why he might do this. So therefore, we have in this Mishnah case, so kodev nechasav lebanav, tzarech shiichtov mi'ayom ulachar mita divi Rabbi Yehuda. If he wants this to be effective, the way you must do it is to write Me'ayom Lachar Mita. This is actually what we discussed yesterday. The Rashbam explained what Me'ayom Lachar Mita is. The Balei Tosafot said, even though that's the meaning of the Mishnah here, nevertheless, the meaning over there in yesterday's daf is different. Me'ayom Lachar Mita means that he gifts the underlying principle to the children today, but he maintains for himself the production rights, the leasehold in the property. It's a trust where he gets the dividends of the trust in a sense, but the trust transfers ownerships to the children immediately. So me'ayom means from today the principal belongs to the child, but lachar mita, then the production or the output of the field will belong to the children. So this way he can support himself until he passes away, but then the gift is already done from today and the assets are cleared out of his name immediately. So that's what the me'ayom lachar mita is, and that's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Rabbi Yehuda says, in order to do this, you need to include this language in the contract. It's me'ayom ulachar mita. Rabbi Yossi omer, eno tzarich. You don't have to do this. We'll see in the Gemara why you don't have to write this language in. It's because of the dating of the shtar. The fact that a shtar has a date in it implicitly means that he wants it to happen today. And therefore we have to interpret the meaning or the value of having a date in the shtar. Akutev nechasav libno lachar moto. Person who, again, gifts all of his property to his child, lachar moto. Here is just a term for this equivalent of Me'ayom Lachar Mita. Using that same Lashon that we used before, he gifts him that manner. Ha'av eni yachol limkor. The father doesn't have rights to sell. Mipnei shehein k'tuvim leben. Because the son owns the underlying principle. The father doesn't own the principle anymore, so he can't sell the land to anyone else. Ba'ben eni yachol limkor. The son can't sell it. Mipnei shehein b'shut av. Because the father controls the property until he dies. So each of them has a certain ownership right in the property. The son has the principal rights in the property, and he will get the payroll rights, he will get the output rights when his father passes away. The father has the output rights, but he has no principal rights. So macharaav, if the father sells, he can sell whatever rights that he owns. He can't sell what he doesn't own, but he can sell what he does own, and that is mechurim ad shiyamot. He can sell the output of the property until his death. But that's what he owns. He owns the output until his death, and he can sell that. Machara ben, eno lokeach ben klum ad shimot av. And if the son sells it, he has no rights. He has principal rights now, but the exercising of those principal rights are only meaningful once the father passes away. So if he sells it to a buyer, the buyer has no rights until the father passes away, because then it will come to the son. And once it comes to the son, the buyer will get those rights. Now, it's not the equivalent of selling davar shelo bali olam. When you sell something that does not yet exist, or you do not yet own, then you can't have it be in the future, because that's something that is problematic, because we can't make a kinyan on something today. Over here, the son does have principal rights immediately. He just can't exercise those principal rights. The principal rights don't give him anything, because of the father's maintaining of the payroll rights. But nevertheless, he does have ownership rights on the property immediately. It's just meaningful once his father passes away. And therefore, he can enter into a sale that's a forward sale of the property when his father dies, because he does have ownership rights today. And therefore, it's not classified as a davar shelo bali olam. It's considered to be a future sale of assets that you own today. And that's why it would work and not fail because of davar shelo bali olam. Now the Gemara asks, v'chi kata me'ayom lachar mita ma'havi. Why does that help? Writing from me'ayom lachar mita, the way we're interpreting it in the Mishnah, is me'ayom, the gufa karka goes, it's sold today. Achar mita, the peirot will join the gufa karka and you'll get it then. Why is that efficacious in terms of creating the scenario that we want? Hatnan, we have a Mishnah in Gittin. Me'ayom lachar mita, the person states or gives to his wife a get and says, this is a get me'ayom from today. Ulachar mita, and after I die, get veino get. We're bisafek as to whether it is a get or it's not a get. Because we have a problem now as to determining when was the effective date of the get. Was the effective date of the get today, mayom, and that would be that it's a good get? Or is the effective date of the get, lachar mita, after he dies? Obviously you can't give a get after you die, it's meaningless. So which one is it? We don't know. Now, the truth is, he said get first, me'ayom, so maybe it should have been effective immediately. What we don't know is, when he said, ul'achar mita, what is the meaning of that? Did he retract his first statement? He at first said, I want the get to be today, and he said, no, ul'achar mita, that's what he meant to say? Or he meant to say, me'ayom ul'achar mita means from today, but just for when I die, it'll be meaningful. So, the inmate, and if he passes away, chuletzet velo mitya bemet, she has to do chalitza and no yibum. Because if there was a get, then the brothers are surat to her bekaret, because it's an esherach. After divorce, there's no mitzvah of yibum, and therefore it's a problem of karet. So she can't perform yibum. The other hand, she can't walk away, because maybe there was no get, and she is chayevet in yibum, so therefore we say to do chalitza, and not yibum. Hotam misapkalan. Itana havi, ichazara havi. We don't know, in that scenario, what's the meaning of the achar mita. The meaning of the achar mita condition, which says, the get's effective today when I die. So when I die, retroactively, the get is effective from today. That's what the achar mita was saying. I just don't want it to go effective until I die. But once I die, it's effective from today's date, which would work, and the get would be a fine get. On the other hand, or it's a chazara. The other possibility is that it is a retraction of the first statement. Give me the get today. No, achar mita. We don't know what the achar mita adds. Is it a retraction or is it a condition? Over here, we can bifurcate the statement and say, gufa kani me'ayom, peira la'achar mita. The gufa karka can be acquired today, and the peirot can be la'achar mita. Or in essence, the way the Rishbam explains it is that by the case of get, they are mutually exclusive, the two terms. You can't have it be both me'ayom or la'achar mita. Either a get is a get now, or it's a get after mita. You can't have it be both. You can't have residual rights left in the get. Because a get is a final termination and severing of the relationship between the husband and the wife. So you can't have a get which says that you're partially divorced, and then the divorce will complete at some other point. That's not called a divorce then. The only way it's a divorce is if it's a complete severing of the relationship. So now I have mutually exclusive terms, one telling me it's today, and one telling me it's lachar mita. And I can't reconcile them because I can't spread the get across the two of them. So I have one of two options. It's either today, or it's lachar mita. It's one of those two, and I don't know which of those two is, and then I'm left with safek. In our situation, when you use me'om lachar mita, I can bifurcate it and say that both are meaningful in this context. I can have a partial sale. I can have a sale of the principal without the peirot, and the peirot will be completed later. Since I can interpret it to have meaning in our context without it being mutually exclusive, that's what we will do. So me'ayom lachar mita baget will lead to a problem or to a safek. By our case, it will lead to a resolution, which is me'ayom the guf is sold, lachar mita it will be the peirot are sold. And that's why we have a different outcome here than we have in the case of get. Rabbi Yossi Omer, eino tzarich. Rabbi Yossi says you don't need to write me'ayom lachar mita inside the document. Rabba Baravua Chalash. He fell ill. Al Gabe Ravuna Rav Nachman. So Ravuna and Rav Nachman went to visit him. Now, generally when you had a Talmid Chacham who falls ill, it's your opportunity to ask him all the questions you have left over because he's likely not going to be around for too much longer. Amalei Ravuna Rav Nachman. Ravuna says, Rav Nachman, by mine, ask Rabba Baravua, halacha k'Rabbi Yossi, or ain't halacha k'Rabbi Yossi? Is the halacha like Rabbi Yossi or not? In our Mishnah, machloka Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, is the halacha like Rabbi Yossi? Amalei, taimed the Rabbi Yossi, la yadana. Rav Nachman says back to him, I don't understand why Rabbi Yossi's din applies. Meaning, I don't understand the reasoning behind why he says you don't need milo machar mitah. Halacha yibayimine? I should ask him if the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi or not like Rabbi Yossi. I don't even understand Rabbi Yossi's opinion. Now I'm going to ask whether the halacha is like him. So Amalei, so Rav Huna says to Rav Nachman, ad bayimine, I halacha ilo. You ask the question about whether the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi or not. V'tayma ana amina lacha. And I'll tell you what the reason is behind Rabbi Yossi's position. Now in all likelihood, Rav Huna is pressing Rav Nachman to ask the question, because Rav Nachman is related to Rabba Bar Avuah. I think he's a son-in-law of Rabba Bar Avuah. And so because of that, he feels that Rav Nachman would be more comfortable speaking to him when he's ill. So for that reason, Rav Huna is pressing Rav Nachman to ask the question. Rav Huna himself is not asking the question. So Baminei. So he queried of Rabba Bar Avuah and asked him, is the halacha like Rabbi Yossi or not? Amalei achi amar Rav. This is what Rav says. Halacha ki Rabbi Yossi. The halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. Butter the nafku, so after they left from the visit, Amalei, hainu taimei de Rabbi Yossi. I promised you, I tell you what the reasoning is behind Rabbi Yossi. Here it is. Damar zmano shel shtar mochiach alav. The date in the shtar indicates when the effectiveness of the shtar was. Ve'yom alach amita says, something's affected today, and something's affected lachar mita. So if you just wrote in the shtar, lachar mita, then what Rabbi Yossi says is, implied by the dating of the shtar, is that Mehayom is there too. Otherwise, why is there any value in the date of the shtar? The whole purpose of the shtar is to have it be la'achar mitah, then why have a date in the shtar at all? Because the effectiveness of the kinyan is only at that point in time. And dating it won't change anything. It's not going to help you even for hierarchy. Because it's not relevant. If you give a shtar to someone else afterwards, their kinyan will precede yours as long as their kinyan is effective before yours. If your kinyan is only effective lachar mitah, which is, doesn't work, but nevertheless, you're postponed. The effectiveness of your kinyan is postponed. That means nothing has happened today. That means in the interim, he can do whatever he wants with the property. So why date the shtar then? The date on the shtar has no relevance whatsoever. The answer is, you date the shtar to say there's something happening today. And so the dating of the shtar is the equivalent of saying me'ayom, something is effective. Lachar mitah is in addition to me'ayom. So that's how Rabbi Yossi says or solves the problem that Rabbi Yehuda is trying to deal with, which is how do you make a kinyan lachar mitah? You have to do me'ayom lachar mitah. Rabbi Yossi says that is replaced with the date and lachar mitah, and therefore you can accomplish it without that language. Tanya namiyochi, we have a brayta that supports that understanding. Rabbi Yossi omer, enu tzarich mipnei shuzmano shostar mochiach alav. You don't need this because the zman of the shtar proves that the shtar must be effective from today's date. Now, this leads to a very difficult situation because, based on our Gemara here, you would say that Rav Paskin like Rabbi Yossi, Rav Nachman is involved in the situation. We know that by Rav Nachman, Bedine, the halacha is Rav Nachman. So and then you would think that the halacha should be like Rabbi Yossi. Seems like a clear-cut case. We don't even have so much machloket about it. You have Rav saying it. You have Rav Nachman who asked Rabbi Bar Avuah about it. He got an answer, and nobody seems to argue about it that the halacha is like a Rabbi Yossi. The problem is that in the Gemara and Gitin, we have a statement by Rav, which is the following. Etkin Rav beGitin, Rav is mitakim in Gitin, min yomadnan, he put in the language of the get, min yomadnan, from today, mehayom, lafuke. Why did he put that language in the get? To exclude the position of Rabbi Yossi, damar zmano mochiach alav, who says that the date is sufficient. So you see that Rav said that by Gitin you need to put me'ayom into the get, and the reason he wants that is to say that Rabbi Yossi is wrong, and that the dating of the shtar is not sufficient. You actually have to write in me'ayom. So now you have a huge problem. You have Rav saying, by Gitin we need the language me'ayom because Rabbi Yossi is wrong. All of a sudden over here you have Rav paskening like Rabbi Yossi. So the answer could be, and there are those that suggest that it's the difference between Isur and Mamon. When it comes to Isur, the date is not enough, or the date doesn't work. By Mamon, the date works. You'd have to come up with an explanation that would explain why exactly you would make such a distinction between Isurim and Mamon, but that's possibly a solution to the problem. The other possible solution to the problem is that Rav changed his mind. And over here he said Halacha k'Rav Yosi, but later on he changed his mind and he thought the Halacha was k'Rav Yehuda, and therefore he was mitakein that the Gittin have me'ayom in it. So that's another possibility, but that has halachic implications, which means that the Halacha is no longer like Rav Yosi, the Halacha is like Rav Yehuda. On the other hand, the Rashbam over here and the Balei Tosafot and the Gemara and Gittin say a similar thing, is that when Rav said that, he didn't really mean that the halacha is not like Rabbi Yossi. He was doing it to improve the shtar. Meaning that sometimes you write things into a shtar, even though they're not necessary, because of what's called sachut alashon. Because it's a clarity of language. It makes it much more obvious what's happening over here. You don't need a Talmud Chacham to figure out what the contract is saying when it says me'ayom. If it only has a date in it, then you need someone to know that the date is enough to make it me'ayom. Or then you won't have a Beit Din who doesn't know the halacha, paskening incorrectly about the shtar. There's reasons to put language in a shtar, even though it's unnecessary, in order to make it clear that it means me'ayom, and that you're not using the date for that reliance, even though you could do so. And that's what the Rashbam says over here as well. When Rav was mitakin that by Gittin, it was simply that. It was a takana, but it wasn't his true opinion. His true opinion is that the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. Just by the issue of Ishid Ish, where we're dealing with a serious Isur and a serious issue, over there he said, I want the get to be as clear as possible, and therefore we'll put language into the get that isn't necessarily required halachically, but I think it will benefit us to have that language in there. And that's the way the Rashbam reads it. And he brings a proof to what he's saying, which is that the Geonim, when they speak about contracts, they say that there is a Nehige b'mitifta k'Reb Yehuda. In the yeshiva, we're nohe k'Reb Yehuda. Afilu b'mamom. Even in monetary matters, k'takanat Rav b'gitin. Similar to Rav's takanat b'gitin, we also do by mamom. That would imply that, first of all, Rav's statement might have been differentiated in gitin versus mamom. And now he says that we have the practice like Reb Yehuda, which would imply that we paskan like Reb Yehuda. But the Rashbam is medayek in the Lashon and says nehige. Doesn't say that we do like Rabbi Yehuda. It says the minhag in the yeshiva is to follow Rabbi Yehuda like the takana of Rav. What that shows you is that it's not a halachic necessity to do it. Rather, it was a minhag. The minhag was to be choshesh for Rabbi Yehuda, or like what Rav said by Gittin, we want something that's clearer. We want something that is much stronger when it comes to Gittin. And then he says, we're going to see in a second that the Gemara is about to ask a question. And the Rashbam believes that the Gemara's question is Aliba de Rabbi Yehuda, is according to Rabbi Yehuda. Why would the Gemara ask a question according to Rabbi Yehuda? The Gemara just concluded the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. Generally, when we paskin like one mandamar, the Gemara will ask questions, will delve into the position that is halacha. But the position is not halacha, the Gemara will generally not leave. The fact that the Gemara is about to discuss the position of Rabbi Yehuda indicates that the Gemara leans some way towards Rabbi Yehuda. And that's what the Rashbam quotes from the Rabbeinu Hananel. Since the Gemara made the effort to look into Rabbi Yehuda's position, that's why they have the minhag to hold like Rabbi Yehuda. Even though halachically it's like Rabbi Yossi, nevertheless the minhag is to practice like Rabbi Yehuda because of that fact that the Gemara does such. Alright, so that's what the Rashbam concludes. The tfos divi Rabbi Yossi gabi mamon. The halach is like Rabbi Yossi when it comes to monetary matters. The Rav Nachman hilchata kabadei bedinei. Who debayed me, Rabba Barua? Amma Svirle, Rab Nachman Hachi. Rab Nachman must hold that way, and therefore, halachically, for sure, by Mamon, the din is like Rabbi Yossi. By the Gitin, Rab was mitakein that we should have the Lashon Me'ayom, but that's not a halachic requirement, it's an enhancement. And then the Gonim, in their yeshivot, were knowing, even by Mamon, like Rabbi Yehuda, but again, it's a minhag, it's not a halachic decision, like Rabbi Yehuda. So now the next question of the Gemara is, Bayim minei Rova mi Rav Nachman. So Rova, Talmid Rav Nachman asked him, Bahakna'a mahu. What is the din when you have a shtar kinyan? So until now we were speaking about either a get, or you're speaking about a shtar that is a raya. It's giving evidence of the fact that something happened. What happens to a shtar hakna'a, which is that the shtar itself is functioning as the kinyan? So now, according to Rabbi Yossi, there's nothing to speak about because there's a date in the shtar and it should have the same effect. Question is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, do you still need me'ayom ulachar mita? Because in this instance, there is a kinyan. The physical kinyan should make it that there's some effectiveness today. Because you have the physical kinyan, and then you have the language in the shtar. So maybe the combination of the two simulates me'ayom ulachar mita. So even for Rabbi Yehuda, who says generally the date is not enough, but if there's a physical kinyan today, maybe that is sufficient. So Amalei, b'hakna'a, einu tzarich. You don't need it over there. Even Rabbi Yehuda agrees, you don't need ma'aliyom al-machar mita. Rav Papi Amar, ika aknita de tzarich. There's sometimes that you have a shtar kinyan or shtar kna'a that does require you to write ma'aliyom al-machar mita. Ika aknita de lo tzarich. And there's certain instances where you don't need it. Akne'e v'kinyana minei. If it is that I gave it to him, I granted him the kinyan, v'kinyana minei, and he acquired it, then you don't need the me'ayom ha'achamita. Kinyana minei v'akne'e, if it says I acquired it from him, and he granted the kinyan, tzarich, then you do need it. So the Rashbam here brings an interpretation that said it is the duplication of the language that does that. The duplication of the language is what causes you not to have me'ayom ha'achamita, because the duplication in and of itself shows you that they're trying to say something more than just the kinyan, they're trying to say something happened today. The Rashbam rejects that because of the way that the Gemara reads. The Gemara here reads that the order of the language makes a difference. If it was just the duplication that causes it to be extraneous language, then why would you need it to be in this order or that order? Just the fact that you have both of them should be enough to say that that is sufficient not to need me'ayom ha'achamita. For that reason, the Rashbam gives an alternate pshat, and we also have the pshat of the Rabbeinu Gershom. The Rashbam says the order matters because it's speaking about the beginning of the shtar and the end of the shtar. In the beginning of the shtar, it says, Akniyeh. At the end of the shtar, when it reviews the highlights of the shtar, there's like a summary line. We'll see later on in the Gemara that at the end of a shtar, they repeat the major items that were in the shtar right before the Edim sign. So when the Edim sign, they're signing to those major points. So if he said in the beginning of the shtar, Akniyeh, that I granted him a kinyan, meaning the giver, the grantor of the kinyan here says Akniyeh, and then at the end of the shtar, it says, V'kinyana minei, and he acquired it from me, then you don't need anything more, einu tzarich. Because in essence, that becomes excessive language, extraneous language. Because as the Rashbam says over here, Hilkach im katuv rosh shtar akniyeh, ubseif katuv kinyana, hainu yipui koach. That is strengthening his position here. Demashma shnei kinyanim. Because it makes it sound like there were two kinyanim here. Huikna, the grantor granted a kinyan, become anu kinyanu mimenu. And we, the recipient, also took a kinyan from him. So obviously it's two sides of the same transaction. But the way that it's written is that I granted him a kinyan, and then he took another kinyan. So it sounds like there are two kinyanim here. That extra language gives you the power to say that it means me'ayom. On the other hand, if it's in reverse, whereas in the beginning of the shtar it says, v'kinyana minei. So in the beginning of the shtar it says, this shtar is about this field, which he acquired from me. And then at the end of the shtar, it says, I granted him the kinyan. Over there, it sounds like you're speaking about the exact same kinyan. It's saying that the shtar is written about the kinyan that this person took, meaning that he received or accepted the kinyan. And at the end of the shtar, when it says that I granted him the kinyan, that's explaining how he got the kinyan in the beginning of the shtar. He got it because I granted it to him. If it was just written in the beginning of the shtar that I granted him the kinyan, then implicit in him granting the kinyan is that he received the kinyan. Then when you write the kinyana minei at the end of the shtar, that's the extra kinyan. So that's the way the Rashbam views it. It's the beginning and the end of the shtar. Depending on the order, one of them sounds like a repetition, and one of them sounds like an explanation. If it's a repetition, then you have an excess kinyan, which you can use to say that it means me'ayom. If it's simply an explanation of what happened before, then it's the same kinyan, and you don't have anything from it. That's the way the Rashbam explains it. The Balei Tosafot criticized the Rashbam by saying that later on in the Gemara, it says anything that's written in the last row is not meaningful. Meaning that when we have Shita Achrona, the Gemara says later on, in lemeidim. We don't learn from the last line of a shtar. So if there's a conflict between what's written at the top of the shtar and what's written in the last line of the top of the shtar will govern, because that's the place where the major items are placed, and that's the key to the shtar. The latter part is just a repetition. So if there's a conflict, say the amount of money, there's a conflict between the beginning and the end of the beginning of the shtar would dictate or govern in that case. So that's why we don't learn anything. So how could here you learn something significant from the last line in the shtar? The way that the Rishonim deal with that, like the Ramban, says that you don't have to say it was literally in the last line of the shtar. It was just before the last line of the shtar. So again, it's not Shita Achrona literally where we don't learn from it. It was something a little before that. Or in this case, you can indicate that we don't learn something from the Shita Achrona. That's when it's telling us new information. Over here, it's repeating what was before, and it changed the language. That change in language is indicative of the fact that there's something more to the language was above. And so that's maybe how you could explain it, to avoid the problem of the Balei Tosafot. The Rabbeinu Gershom, on the other hand, gives an alternate explanation. He says here, you can see it on the left side in the Rabbeinu Gershom. It's about six lines down. Aknie shenatnalo. Aknie means that he granted him the gift. Bishuv v'kinyan amine. And then it says he took possession of it. Mashma shetala matana b'kinyan. Sounds like he connected the gift to the kinyan. So he says aknie means the gift itself. Kinyano is the kinyan of the gift. So it makes it sound like the gift is only effective through the kinyan, or at the kinyan point. Klomar. Kechi de kaninan me'ayom. Just like the kinyan happens now. Matana nami me'ayom. So too, the gift is today. If that's the case, you don't need me'ayom, because implicit in the language is that just like the kinyan is effective today, so too is the gift. Because the kinyan comes after the gift, implying that the gift is talui in the kinyan, and the kinyan is going to happen today. Aval, ikatav ba v'kinyan amine, if he writes first kinyan amine, and then v'akniye afterwards, shetala kinyan b'matana. It's the other way around. The matana is after. It says, you'll make a kinyan on the matana. Demashma dachar kinyan aita matana. The gift only happened after the kinyan, because of the order of the language. It says kinyan and then matana. That implies that maybe the matana happens at a later date. The kinyan's today, but the gift is later. The implicit in that would be that the matana was after death. Obviously, there's no shtar lachar mita. So he says the order of the language matters. If you gift and then there's a kinyan, it means that the kinyan is what modifies the gift or tells us when the gift happens at the point of kinyan. On the other hand, if you have a kinyan and then a gift, it just says the kinyan's today to make it effective later on, which means that the gift only happens at a later date. So even though there's a kinyan today, the gift is only happening a much later date because the gift happens after, or is mentioned afterwards in the shtar. So that's the way the Rabbeinu Gershom explains the difference in the language that we have here. Matkiv la Rav Chanina Misura. So Rav Chanina Misura asked on this differentiation that, or distinction that Rav Papi made. Mi ika mide da'ana lo yadane v'safra yade. Is it possible that this is something that the Chachamim are not aware of? This distinction that Rav Papi made was not well known to the Chachamim at the time. Is it possible that we don't know this? And the Sofrim know this in piece of information? They know which way to write it? So he says, Shalunu l'sisafre de Abaye. They asked the Sofrim of Abaye, v'yade. And they knew this distinction in the language. L'sisafre de Rava. And then they went and asked the Sofrim of Rava, v'yade. And they did know it. So the answer in the end is yes. The Sofrim were aware of this difference. And even though we aren't aware of what Rav Papi said, nevertheless, the Sofrim were made aware by Abaye and Rava of the fact that there is such a distinction. V'huna, brother of Yeshua Amar, ben akine v'kinyanamine, ben kinyanamine v'akine lo tzarich. Doesn't matter. The order of the language is irrelevant. In either one of those cases, we consider it as if it said me'ayom in the shtar, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. The only question that they have, or where there is a machloket, is ubeduchran pitkamei dave b'anpana plige. It's only when the language in the shtar says that this is a tizkoret, this is a maskeret, this is a reminder or a documentation of the words that were between us that happened here. So then the shtar is not necessarily a shtar kinyan in that case. Because the shtar, based on the language that's written in it, is saying that this is just to document an agreement that came between us. In that case, there's an absence of kinyan in the shtar. So in that case, plige, that's where they'll have a machloket, where Rabbi Yossi will say the date is sufficient, and Rabbi Yehuda will say the date is not sufficient. So that's the distinction where, in a shtar akna, as long as there's a kinyan in the shtar whatsoever, Rabbi Yehuda says, you don't need anything more than that. That's the equivalent of saying me'ayom, because the kinyan makes it as if there's something meaningful happening today, and that means that it's me'ayom, and the achar mita automatically. On the other hand, if it just says that this is a equivalent of a shtar raya, that it's just a maskeret to that which happened here before us, there, that's not enough, because then there's no mention of the kinyan explicitly in the shtar. And if that's the case, what makes it me'ayom? So Rabbi Yossi will say the date. Rabbi Yehuda already told us that the date's not sufficient for him, and in that case, Rabbi Yehuda will not say that it's the equivalent of having me'ayom. Amar Rav Kahana, Amrita l'shmaita kamei de Rav Zvid min Narda. I said over all of this memra before Rav Zvid from Narda. That's the way that you have it. That's the layout of the sugya according to you. Anan haracha matninan la. This is the way that we have it. Amar Rava, Amar Rav Nachman, b'haknaa, enu tzarich, Ben akniyei v'kinyan aminei, ben kinyan aminei v'akniyei, lo tzarich. In neither of those cases do you need to write me'ayom. Even there, Rabbi Yehuda agrees. B'duchran pitkamei davaban pana plige. But in the case where it's written that this is just to document the transaction that happened between us, there you would have the machloka Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. So the only difference in the second Lashon is that instead of being a question that Rabba is querying of Rav Nachman, and then Rav Nachman answers him, and then we have the modification or qualification of a puppy, over here it's a statement. Rabba Amar Rav Nachman. Rabba says over in the name of Rav Nachman, here is the din. So whether that's because both are true, which is that Rabba asked the question of Nachman, got the answer, and then the qualification of a puppy, and then he said it over. When he said it over, he says, I'm Rabba, I'm Rav Nachman. Then he said over the Memra in that way. So it could be that they're both right. Or the two stories are mutually exclusive, which says that one says it was a question that Rabba posed, the other one says, no, it was a statement that Rabba made. But in the end, you have the same conclusion, which is, any shtar that has a kinyan embedded in the shtar, even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that me'ayom, it's the equivalent of saying me'ayom, and you don't need that language in there. If the shtar is absent a kinyan, then Rabbi Yossi will say the date is sufficient, and Rabbi Yehuda will say that's not sufficient, you need the word me'ayom in the shtar. Right? Akutev nechasav libno lachar moto. Itmar. So now we have a question. Machara ben b'chayei av. If the son sold it while the father was still alive, umeta ben b'chayei av, and then the son predeceases the father. So remember in the Mishnah, you're allowed to sell the rights that you own. The father owns the output rights. He could sell them today to anybody he wants, and they'll be sold until he passes away, the father. The ben has rights once the father passes away to the principal of the property, but it's only once the father passes away. So if he sold it, and the father passed away, then the buyer would get it, because he bought the son's rights. And when the rights come to the son, the buyer will then get it, because that's what he purchased. He purchased those rights that the son will get after the death of the father. The problem here is that the son predeceases the father. In this situation, you have a father who granted the principal to the son, but the perot will only come to the son achar mita. So if he sells to a buyer, the buyer only gets the property after death. Now, the son's not around when that happens. So now what happens? The son is missing at the time of death. So when it comes to Yerusha, it's easy to understand what happens, because we have a principle that even when someone's in the kever, even when they're in the grave, they can pass on the Yerusha to the next party. So that means if you have a grandfather, a father, and a son, if the father predeceases the grandfather, the grandson will still inherit the property as if he was his father. Because the father gets it from the grandfather and then passes it to his son in the kever. The question is, what happens here? We're not speaking about Yerusha, we're speaking about a transaction. And so now, the transaction take place after the death of the individual? Here, the son predeceases the father. So when the father passes away, there's no son here to pass it to the buyer. Is the absence of the son in that link make it that the buyer can't get the property? That's the question that we have here. And you have machloket. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, lo kana lokeach. Rabbi Yochanan says, it doesn't work. The lokeach, the buyer does not get it. Meaning that the lokeach here who bought it, for when the father passes away, that he would take over the rights of the son, that fails because the son's not around to pass him the rights. Reish Lakish amar kana lokeach. Reish Lakish says it still works over here. Now, the way that the Rishbam explains it over here, you can see the top line in the Rishbam. Afilu kishimota avachar kach. When the father dies afterwards, the son predeceased him, when the father dies afterwards, shmeolam lo ayu ruim lavoli de ben, they were never rightfully the child's. The son really never had rights to this property. He only had rights once his father passed away. But those rights are not permanent rights. They were rights that if his father passed away and he was around, he would get those rights. Since he's not around, he doesn't get those rights. And since he doesn't get those rights, when the father passes away, the lokeach has nothing to hang on to. He has no rights because the son had no rights. But that means, or that's implied by that, that's what the Rishbam says over here, what do you do with the property now? When the father passes away, the answer is, it goes to his yoshim, goes to his inheritors. Does not go to the son's son. For instance, if this son, who he had granted the ownership to in his lifetime, so that after he died, he would get the property, if he had a son already, that son would not necessarily be the rightful heir to this, because the son has no rights whatsoever. Obviously, if the son sold it while the father was alive, and he's still alive at the time of the death of his father, even Rabbi Yochanan agrees it would pass through to the buyer. But over here, where the son predeceases the father, the son has no rights or residual rights in the property after he dies. And therefore, the Yoshea Av are the inheritors or the rightful heirs of his property, not the son at all. The Balei Tosafot disagree with this, and you can see that Lokana Lokeach, Perish Rivam V'yachzeru Yosheh Ben. We say that Lokeach doesn't get it. It doesn't mean it goes back to the inheritors of the father. It goes to the inheritors of the son. Because the reason that it goes back is Elo Hainu Taima Shachzeru Yosheh Ben Mishom Demimita Da Ben Nachlu Nechassim Lifnei Beno. Because these things are happening in two different ways. Which is that the lokeach, the buyer, bought it from the son. But his rights to buy it from the son only exist if the son is around. Because it has to go to the son first, and then to the buyer. On the other hand, if you have a situation in which the son has already predeceased the father, now, for Yerusha purposes, the son being in the grave is not an inhibitor. It's not a problem. It's not a hindrance to him getting it because we know that Yerusha can pass through the grave. So that means when the father gave those rights to the son passed away, his grandson will step into the shoes of the son and he'll basically take those rights at that point in time. So he'll get whatever his father had granted the son, the grandson will get. What doesn't happen, according to this, is that the lokeach, the buyer who is buying the rights from the son, he can't get those. Because he can't get the rights from a son who's in the keber. So there'll be a difference between the purchaser, whose rights depend on the son getting it, but the son is dead, so he can't get those rights. On the other hand, when it comes to Yerusha, death is not a break in the line of Yerusha, and therefore the grandson can still get the property. So the Rashbam says, according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says that the Lokeach is out of the picture here, the Rashbam believes it goes back to the Yoshea Av. The son is out completely from the picture. He's more consistent, at least in his opinion in that case, because then at least the son is out, he's out completely. Although, in the case where he's alive, it still will work. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot are more consistent in saying that the son always gets it. It's just a question of the Lokeach gets it. The son will always get it. It's a question of the son will get it, and then the Lokeach. It's a question of the grandson will get it, because of the son. The Lokeach can only get it if the son is alive, but he's not alive, he won't get it, and therefore, if the son dies, the Yosheh Ben are the inheritors. So that's the difference between the Balei Tosafot and the Rashbam here in explaining this position of Rabbi Yochanan. Now the Gemara explains what's the reasoning behind the machlok between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan amar lo kana, lokeach, the lokeach doesn't get it. Kinyan peirot, kikinyan aguf domi. Because the acquisition of the peirot is the equivalent of a kinyan aguf. Now obviously you cannot say over here is that kinyan peirot really means a physical kinyan aguf to the point where there's no other ownership here. The father gave the principal to the son. He maintained the peirot. He maintained the usage rights. What Rabbi Yochanan says is, usage rights give you a semblance of ownership in the property. So because of that, the father has some retained principal ownership in the property. If that's the case, then when the son predeceases his father, those rights of the kinyan aguf are exercised by the father, or can be exercised by the father, to the point where he can push out the lokeach. The buyer is gone. Reish Lakish amar, kana lokeach, kinyan peirot, lav kinyan aguf domi. On the other hand, Reish Lakish believes that the lokeach does get it, because the kinyan peirot of the father does not block, or is not a hindrance, in the kinyan aguf of the son, and that kinyan aguf then can pass to the lokeach, to the buyer. And the Rashbam points out that obviously if the son never sold the property and then he predeceased his father, when the father passes away, the property will pass to the son and then to the grandson. So even though he has a kinyan peirot that's kinyan aguf domi here in the case of Rabbi Yochanan, that kinyan aguf is enough to ward off the lokeach. It's not strong enough to take it away from the grandson. That's similar to what the Balei Tosafot were pointing out before, that when we say over here that lo kana lokeach, that's only lokeach, it's not koneh. But the grandson still gets it. And that's the difference between the relationship of a grandson to the son who was the inheritor of the property, where it can happen even in the grave, versus the case of a lokeach, where you have a son and a father with competing interests or rights in the property. So if the son makes it past the point of his father's death, then the kinyan of peirot of the father disappears, and the kinyan aguf is solely to the son. In that case, the son can sell it to the lokeach because he has full rights to sell. On the other hand, if the son predeceases the father, then he had kinyan aguf in there, and the grandson will pick that up, but the father also has a kinyan aguf in the property because of his kinyan peirot. Because of his usage rights, he also has a kinyan aguf. That kinyan aguf will block the sale to the lokeach, and push the lokeach out of the picture. And so that when the father passes away, who's the grandfather now, who's going to pass it to the grandson, when he passes away, it'll go directly to the grandson because he still has goof rights, the father here, which basically block the lokeach's rights. The other hand, according to Reish Lakish, the father has no kinyanim and the physical property and the principle of the property, and therefore, whatever the son sold, he sold. And it's good sale, because the father can never reassert any rights over the property. Now again, here, it doesn't mean that when you say kinyan perot, kinyan guftam, it means like it's like you own the property. You don't own the property, you only own the kinyan perot. But it has the equivalent effect of you owning the property during that period of time. So Gemara says, Ba'afligu ba'achad zimna. Haven't we already seen this machloket between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish? And so why over here do you need to repeat this machloket? Because there it says, Dimar, Mocher Sadeo de Perot. Person who sells his field for the output of the field, to use the output of the field. Rabbi Yochanan Amar may vi vikore. Rabbi Yochanan says you bring Perot, Bikurim from that field, you bring them up to the Mikdash in Yerushalayim, and you read the Mikra Bikurim, the Parsha Bikurim. Reish Lakish Amar may vi venu kore. You have to bring the Bikurim, but you can't read the Parsha of Bikurim. Rabbi Yochanan says, if you believe Kinyan Perot, Kinyan Aguf Dami, since the Kinyan Perot is as if you own some rights in the property, the underlying principle, even though you don't own the principle, it's as if you have some rights in the underlying principle, then you can come up to Yerushalayim and say, based on what the language that's found in Mikra Bikurim, asher natata li Hashem. So now you can call it Asher Natata Li, it's my land. So obviously if you own the land, you can say that. But here too, according to Rabbi Yochanan, even if you just have the output rights to the land, you have some sort of principal ownership here, and you can say Asher Natata Li. Reish Lakish says there's no, Kinyan HaPirot does not Kinyan HaGuftami, and therefore you can never make the statement Asher Natata Li, because it's not your property. So then, why do you have to bring up the Bikurim? So the Rishbam claims because of the beginning of the Parsha. It says, "Lakachta mereshit kol pri ha'adama, asher tavi me'artzecha, asher Hashem lokecha noten lach, v'samta betenet." So it says there that you have to bring up all the first fruits of the land. So the Rishbam says, that me'artzecha, that you can do, because you're bringing the fruits from the land of Israel. On the other hand, to say, asher natata li, you can't. So he says, the obligation to bring up the fruits, that holds. But the obligation to read does not hold. The Balei Tosfot are upset by that. And they say, Perish HaKuntris. They bring the Rashbam. And he says, I don't understand. It's mutually exclusive. Either it is or it isn't. Min HaTorah, there's only one type of bringing a Bikurim. It's a bring Bikurim and you read Mikra Bikurim. There's no such thing, Min HaTorah, that you bring Bikurim and don't read it. The only people who bring Bikurim and don't read the Parshas when they have a Safek. Because they have a Safek, we said earlier in the Masechta that we don't want them saying Sheker in the Mikdash. So we don't have you read Mikra Bikurim because there's a risk that it's Sheker. But nobody would say that bringing up the Bikurim and not reading Mikra Bikurim is the Ikar Mitzvah or the way that the Torah envisioned the Mitzvah. But that's what the Rishbam is saying. There's a possibility that you can have a situation or circumstance where you bring up Bikurim and don't read Mikra Bikurim because of the difference in the Psukim. And therefore the Balei Tosafot say, V'tema, Dir Krinim Bei Admatcha, Krinim Bei Nami Min Adama Shenatat Ali. You can't separate between the two. Benira, Shetiknu Midrabanan Lavi Mishum Kinyan Perot. That the Rabbanan instituted a takana. Reish Lakish says you have to bring the perot, not midoraita, but rather because of a takana de Rabbanan. Because of kinyan perot, they didn't want people to think that there's no such mitzvah as bikurim. So by kinyan perot, they say bring it up. Of a kriya lo, but by kriya we don't learn because mechse kashikra. Or, omishum da'ata lefku mechuma maser. If we don't tell him to bring up the perot to Yerushalayim as bikurim, he'll think that the field is exempt from matanot. You don't have to bring Bikurim, you don't have to bring Shumot Masrot, which isn't true. Shumot Masrot, they're not dependent on Adama Shunatatali. So in order to remind the person he's also Chayiv in Shumot Masrot, we make him bring up the Bikurim, Midrabanan. So Tosafot sees this only as an obligation, Midrabanan, to bring up the fruits to Yerushalayim. Then the Rashbam sees it as a din d'oraita, according to Reish Lakish, to bring up the fruits, even though you don't do Mikra Bikurim. What's interesting is that the Rashbam, Adaf Kufnun, in speaking about the necessity to own the land in order to do vidui meiser, over there the Gemara speaks about when you have to own the land in order to do a pruzbo, in order to do mikra bikurim. It says there that vidui meiser is not included in the list. And the Rashbam gives the reason as to why vidui meiser is not included, is because the pasuk by vidui meiser says the following, Et adama asher natata lanu, afilo ein lo karka yitvadeh. Even though he has no karka, he can do vidui meiser. Dai lanu al kol Yisrael koi. Because it's to all of us than his wife. So now you could argue, based on what the Rashbam says here, it's a stira to what the Rashbam says here. He says that the pasuk in the beginning says, he said, by vidoy meiser, the reason why you bring it is because it uses the plural form to say it. And the vidoy meiser, it says, shkifa mon kod shakam in ha-shamayim avarechetam b'chayisot ha-damash natata lanu, kashen ishbata lavuteinu, eretz vad chalavu dvash. But here in our pasuk it says, v'rechakam eship kod rvash etabim artzecha. So over here, the artzecha makes it sound like it's different than the art, asher natata lanu, that's mentioned by vidoy meiser. So anyway, he makes a distinction between asher natata lanu, which is asher natata li. It could be that what the Rishbam is saying over here is that kachta meshiko be'adamash etvi ma'artzecha. Ma'artzecha doesn't mean your particular land. In that context, again, it's the same as lanu, which is ma'artzecha means from the land. The land in the generic sense, the land, not from your land in particular, but the land of Israel. And in that way, the distinction between asher natata li and asher natata lanu would stand. But admatcha, you could argue, means the adama of that was granted to Klal Yisrael as a whole, not the particular adama that was given to you. So that would be the way the Rashbam says it. On the other hand, the Baal Tosafot see an equation between the two and say you can't separate between asher natata li and asher tavi ma'artzecha. Can't separate between those two languages, and therefore the Tosafot believes it's only in din derabonon that you bring it up. According to the Rashbam, it's a din d'oraita that you bring it up, and you're not correct. So now the Gemara says, you already had this din before. Rabbi Yochanan may be bikureh. Rabbi Yochanan says, you bring out the bikurim and you do mikra bikurim. Kasavar, kinyan peirot, kikinyan guftami, because kinyan peirot is the equivalent of owning ownership in the land. Mishlakish amar may be veno koreh. You bring in and don't read. Kinyan peirot, lav kikinyan guftami, because you have the output doesn't mean you have any rights in the land. Amar lecha Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan will say to you, afagav de be'alma, even though in general, kinyan peirot, kikinyan guftami, even though in general I believe that a kinyan peirot is equivalent to a kinyan guf, halcha itzrich. Over here I had to tell you this din by the father and the son. Salgadat chamina abba the gabi brei achuli achil. That the father to the son would waive his rights. It's one thing when you sell to two different parties. You sell the peirot to one party and you sell the principal to another party. So in that situation you could argue that kinyan peirot kinyan guf dami, because the two parties that own it now have no relationship between them, and they want to exercise the fullest rights that they have here. So the one who owns the principal will exercise his full rights, the one who has the payroll will exercise his full rights. That means he will also have some form of kinyan aguf. But by a father and a son, the father wants to grant the gift to the son. So even though the father has a right to the kinyan payroll, kinyan aguf dami, maybe would have just said that he waives that right because he looks out for the best interest of his son, and therefore he would waive the right. That's what it is. Sakadat Ramina, Abba the Gabi Brei, Achuli Achil, Kamash Malan, that we don't say that. That's why Rabbi Yochanan had to repeat over here and say the din over here, even though we already said it by Mikra Bikurim. Rabbi Shimon Lokish Amar, Abba Gabdu Ba'alma, Kinyar Peir Laki, Kinyar Guftami, even though in general we would say that Kinyar Nagperot is not Kinyar Guf, Hocha Yitzrich, by the father and son I need to say to you, Sakadat Ramina, called the Gabi Nafshei, anytime it's your personal interest, person always puts his interest in front of anyone else's interests. Whether a son or not a son, you would think that the person puts himself first. So in a case where he sold both of them to two different parties, the payroll to one party, to the principal to the other party, he has no residual interest personally in it. And therefore each one will exercise their rights to what they have. Kinyan peirot, lav kinyan aguf dami, and therefore the person who has kinyan peirot has that, the kinyan aguf has the kinyan aguf. Over here, the father, where he's giving it to his son, he gives away to his son the minimal amount that will allow it to pass to his son without him losing control. So in that case, maybe he holds back in his kinyan aguf that he's giving to his son, and he leaves the kinyan aperot to the point where you would think kinyan aperot have a kinyan aguf here, because he, for his personal interest, will hold back on the kinyan aguf. So as Reish Lakish says, even though you know my position by Mikra Bikurim, I still need to tell you over here the din is the same, because you might have thought otherwise. So that's exactly what the Rashbam says. The Rashbam says, well, then why don't you just write the case here? And then you would have known Mikra Bikurim. The answer is that because of Rabbi Yochanan's reasoning and Reish Lakish's reasoning, you could flip it on its head. You could say, if Rabbi Yochanan over here in our case says, kinyan peirot, kikinyan aguf dami, it might be because you always put your personal interests first. But when it comes to the case of Mikra Bikurim, maybe he doesn't grant you a kinyan aguf in the property. So, over here, Rabbi Yochanan says that you do exercise that right of kinyan peirot, kinyan aguf, because you have your own personal interests in mind. But in the case, by when he sells him the kinyan peirot, Maybe over there, the personal interest is in the kinyan aguf. And for that reason, he doesn't grant any rights of kinyan aguf. Over here, you're maintaining for yourself the kinyan peirot, and therefore you're going to maintain also a kinyan aguf, because you give yourself first. But in the reverse case, by mikra bikurim, where you're selling the kinyan peirot, and you're maintaining the kinyan aguf, maybe you keep it completely. And in that case, you can't extrapolate from here to mikra bikurim. Or in the reverse, if Reish Lakish says over here, kinyan peirot, lav kinyan aguf dami, maybe that's because the father waives his rights in the face of his son. But in the case of mikra bikurim, where it's not dealing with the son, maybe he doesn't waive his rights. Maybe there you would say, kinyan peirot, kinyan aguf dami. So if you flip their reasons, you can understand why you need to write it in both places. Okay, Eitvei Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. So Rabbi Yochanan challenges Reish Lakish. Nichsai lecha, vacharecha yirash ploni, vacharav yirash ploni. He has a remainder trust that works in a waterfall manner. He grants the nichasim to the first party, and after him, number two will inherit it. And after number two, number three will inherit it. So after number one passes away, it'll pass to number two. After number two passes away, it'll pass to number three. So you have this remainder trust, but works in a waterfall manner. So then, mate, Rishon, if the first one dies, kanash sheni, the second one gets it. Mate sheni, kanash shlishi. Then the third one gets it. What happens? Mate sheni b'chaye rishon. The second one predeceases the first one. So in the waterfall, the middle guy is missing now. So the first one gets it, and he's supposed to pass it to number two, and two is supposed to pass it to three. Two is missing now because he predeceased number one. Mate sheni b'chaye rishon, yachzru nechasim yorshei rishon. Then the yorshei rishon get it, the inheritors of the rishon get it, because you terminated the waterfall. The waterfall said one to two, two to three. Two's missing now. So then it can't go from one to three, it stops, and then one's inheritors will keep the property, and that's it. So what does Rabbi Yochanan prove from here? That when you're missing the middle link, it doesn't continue on. So why is in our case exactly the same? In our case, you have a father granting to the son who sold it to a lokeach. So the son's the equivalent of number two here, the father's equivalent to number one, and number three is the buyer. So here, number two died, the son died or predeceased his father, number two's missing. So you have a link missing there. So just like here, number one has to give it to number two to give it number three. When two's missing, it stops. So it's over there. The father was giving it to the son. The son was giving it to the buyer. The son's missing. So then it'll stay with the father and not go to the son. That might also be the reason that the Rashbam, before it said that when there's missing, it goes to the father's Yoshim and not to the son's Yoshim. Because over here, the equivalent case would say that it goes back to the Yoshe HaRishon. The Yoshe HaRishon over here would be the Yoshe HaAb. Bemita, the Yoshe Notain mi Bayalei. So he says, if you are right, then it shouldn't go back to the Yoshe HaRishon, it should go back to the grantor of the gift. Because according to you, Kinyan Peirot, Lav Kinyan Aguf Dami. And so here, by the Rishon didn't own the land. How do I know he didn't own the land? Because of the way that the gift was given. The gift was given so that the first guy uses it during his lifetime. When he dies, it goes to number two. That shows you that he doesn't own the principle. He has the usage rights while he's alive. So all he has here is a Kinyan HaPeirot. And the original guarantor maintained the principal rights. So his maintaining the principal rights means that after you finish using it, it's going to go to number two. And after you finish using it, it goes to number three. So now, Rabbi Yochanan makes sense, because Kinyan Peirot, Kinyan Aguf Dami. That means that number one, even though he didn't have a principal ownership, he had Peirot ownership. And now when there's principal doesn't continue to move, his Peirot ownership gives him a right to maintain the principal ownership, because Kinyan Peirot, Kinyan Aguf Dami. On the other hand, according to you, Reish Lakish, that Kinyan Peirot is lav Kinyan Aguf Dami, it should go back. The notain, the grantor, is the one who has the principal ownership, because he said it kept passing, and he retained rights to pass it from number one to number two to number three. And over here, where number two is missing, now who does the principal belong to? It belongs to the grantor of the rights. The guy who has it now, number one, just has a kinyan peirot. According to you, that's not meaningful in the ownership of the principal. So why is it going back to the Rishon or the Yoshe Rishon? It should go back to the giver, the grantor of the gift. So therefore, it should have said in the Yoshe Notain. Amalei, kvar targama reboshaya bebavel. So we already have an answer to this question, because Rabbi Shaya and Bavel already explained this. Acharecha shiny. Acharecha is different. When you use the language of acharecha, it implies that there is some sort of ownership here. When you say acharecha, it means that you can use it now, and then after you, it goes to number two. What happens if number one decides to sell the property, decides to destroy the property, decides to do whatever he wants to the property? The answer is he has a right to do so. Because all the gift said was, after you, it will go to the other party. That means it's only if there's something left over to go. But if you make sure there's nothing left over, then there's nothing to move on. That shows you that number one has principal rights, not just payroll rights. And that's what Reish Lakish's answer is. Reish Lakish's answer is, you said, no, the notain maintains all principal rights, and everybody else just has kinyan payroll along the way. So Rabbi Yochanan says, that works well for me, because kinyan payroll is kinyan guf dami, and therefore the Rishon is the primary party who's going to take the principal when they can't pass on anymore. But for you, Reish Lakish, kinyan payroll is lak kinyan guf dami. It should go back to the original grantor, because that's where the kinyan sits. The kinyan guf sits with the original grantor. Reish Lakish says, that's not right. Because when he gave it to number one, he gave him payroll rights and principal rights. The only thing he did is says, if there's any principal left over, then it'll go to another party. But that means in the interim, number one owns it completely. Kinyan payroll and kinyan aguf. Which we're going to see in tomorrow's daf, is a machlok at Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. But according to the sheet of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the first one has a right to do as he pleases with the property, including selling it. Including just getting rid of it completely, so there's nothing left to give to number two. He has no obligation to leave over anything for number two, which means that he's the total owner during that period of time. So that's Reish Lakish's answer to Rabbi Yochanan. So now the Gemara says, "Va'atanya, don't we have a braita yachzuru the yorshe notain?" We do have a braita that says exactly what you would have expected it to say, according to Reish Lakish. So now, according to the Rashbam, Rashbam says this is a question on Rabbi Yochanan. The question is, according to you, Rabbi Yochanan, how are you going to explain that it goes back to Yorshe Notain? Like Reish Lakish could explain that, but right there where it says it goes back to Yorshe Rishon, that's because Acharecha Shiny. And then over here where it says Yachzeru the Yorshe Notain, that's a case which you would have expected from Reish Lakish. And that would be according to the other opinion. We'll see tomorrow Rabbi's opinion who says that you're not allowed to. The first guy doesn't have rights to do what he wants with it. He has to leave over stuff for number two. It shows that he doesn't have any principal rights. But according to you, Rabbi Yochanan, why would the Yorshe Notain ever get it? If Kinyan Peirot is Kinyan Aguf Dami, there's no reason for there ever to go back to the original owner. So that's the question according to the Rashbam. On the other hand, the Balei HaTosafot say over here that they don't think that's right. They don't think the question is on Rabbi Yochanan, rather the question is on Reish Lakish. Because according to Rabbi Yochanan does agree that there is a Machloket Tanaim over here. Since he agrees there's a machloket Tanaim, it's easy to explain what's going on. According to you, Reish Lakish, you now just said there's no machloket anymore. Everybody agrees that in this case it should go back to the Rishon because of Acharecha. It means that there should be nobody who says it goes back to the Notain, because Acharecha automatically or always gets it to the next party to say that you have full ownership rights and then you pass it on afterwards. If that's the case, how can you ever have a bright that says Yachzeru Yorshe Notain? Rabbi Yochanan says, okay, it's a machloket Tanaim. Reish Lakish, who says there is no machloket here, everybody agrees it goes to the Rishon, then why is there ever a case of going back to the Yorshe Notain? And that's the question of the Gemara. You, now Reish Lakish, who says Acharecha Shiny, how do you ever have a braita that says Yachzeru Notain? The answer for both of these is going to be Tanaehi. It is a machloket Tanaim. So for Reish Lakish, it's going to be a machloket Tanaim as to whether Acharecha grants you principal ownership to the point where you can do whatever you want with it. Versus there's a other opinion that says, Acharecha does not grant you Kinyan Aguf, it only grants you Kinyan Peirot, and you have to leave over. Whatever you don't use, you have to leave over to number two. And for Rabbi Yochanan, if you think like the Rashbam, the question is on Rabbi Yochanan, that'll be the answer. The bright here that says, that that is exactly the Machloket Tanaim that we're about to see here. The Girsa actually changes, and you can see that in the top Rashbam, on the top of Kuf Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph, Lo Garsinan El Acharecha Nami Tanayehi. According to the Balei HaTosafot, that's exactly what it should say in the Gemara. The question was on Reish Lakish, and the question on Reish Lakish is, you said Acharecha is shiny. Acharecha is shiny, then you should never have a bright that it says it goes back to the Notain. The answer is, Acharecha is a machloket. That's the way the Balei HaTosafot are going to read the Gemara. For the Rashbam, who thinks the question is on Rabbi Yochanan, Acharecha is not the answer of Rabbi Yochanan, that's the answer of Reish Lakish. It's not relevant. So the answer is Tanaehi. How can you have a bright that says something not like Rabbi Yochanan, because it goes back to the Notain, not to the Rishon? The answer is machloket Tanaim, as to whether it goes to the Rishon or to the Notain, and that is because the machloket about whether Kinyan HaPeirot can Kinyan HaGuf Dami. That is exactly why the Balei HaTosafot reject the explanation of the Rashbam. He says, if you want to go through Shas, there are so many Mishnayot in Shas that have a machloke with Tanaim between Kinyan Beirot, Kinyan Guftami, or Lav Guftami. You would not have brought this machloke between Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel for that machloke. It is not the best example of Kinyan Beirot, Kinyan Guftami, or Lav Dami, and therefore they don't like what the Rashbam is doing and saying that the question is on Rabbi Yochanan, and the answer is we have machloke Tanaim as to whether Kinyan Beirot is Kinyan Guftami. If that was the case, I'll give you better examples, better Mishnayot to bring down, and therefore they maintain the original Girsa in the Gemara, which is that this is a question on Reish Lakish. If you say Acharecha Shiny, then why would you ever have a Braita that says Yachzeru Yorshei Notain? The answer is El Acharecha Tanayehi. This idea that Shiny Acharecha is a Machloket Tanaim, as to whether Acharecha grants you goof rights in the property, or does not grant you goof rights in the property, and we'll continue with that Machloket Tanaim tomorrow morning on the top of Kuf Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph.